Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to veteran event planner Erica Maurer, who's a partner at the New York-based EMRG Media. Now, we're talking virtual events and how to make them more exciting. Please make them more exciting. Thanks for downloading. Now, we've been to a lot of virtual events over the pandemic months, and some of them have been soul-destroying, haven't they? And they're probably not going to go away. So how do we make them more exciting? This episode, I'm chatting to Erica Maurer, who's a partner at EMRG Media in New York, which is a full-service event planning digital marketing company. Now, it's a fascinating chat. It's full of tips and advice on how to stage better virtual events and make them less like giant Zoom calls, which we don't want. Now, you can find EMRG online at emrgmedia.com. That's M for mother, rgmedia.com, and download a free event strategies guide at bookevents.com. That's bookevents.com. Check out the show notes for links, which includes one to Erica's LinkedIn profile. Now, can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free. Love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media, subscribe via your favorite podcast app. Check out all the links in the show notes. Now, the first thing I asked Erica was, do you think virtual events are here to stay now in a big way?
I believe that they are here to stay in some kind of incarnation of it, right? So it could be a true virtual event for the corporations. What we've been seeing here in New York, we've been seeing that a lot of the corporations are still staying in the virtual arena. And ironically, the social events are kind of going back into the market space as to do in person, but we are doing what we'll call like a hybrid, and we'll allow those people who are not yet comfortable to incorporate into the event through a virtual component. So what I do envision in the future is like an alternative option. So as we kind of evolve into whatever that new norm is, I believe, and I'm 99% sure, there will be some piece that will still remain virtual, because it just gives you exposure and it gives you connection with people that are not local. So it's a really huge advantage if you can figure out a way of incorporating the social component in whatever adaptation that you want.
Yeah. Do you think virtual events have kind of changed a lot over the last 12 months? Because I remember some, like, going back pre-pandemic times, and they were kind of like a bit boring, to be quite honest with you. Do you think people have kind of like upped their game a little bit?
100%. You either had to adjust, adapt, and create, or you were kind of like, let's say, left behind. Because as the market space was changing, right, with the pandemic, and there were no options, you had to create what I always call like producing a film or going to like a theater. So it had to be more theatrical. It had to be more curated, and it had to be way more developed, because like you said, people weren't into what we consider the virtual world prior to the pandemic. But now corporations and, you know, clients from a social perspective, everybody was really forced. If you want to get together, what are your alternatives, right? You have to go virtual. And then what does that look like? You don't just want to be sitting on, you know, a virtual, you know, connector and just chatting. You want to feel entertained. So how do we get your imagination flowing? How do we create something that's special and impactful where someone will leave after that event and say, wow, I really enjoyed it. And so it forced all of us to almost reimagine what this new norm would look like and then put it to pencil and paper and really build it out and then execute it.
I suppose a successful virtual event nowadays is a lot more than just a giant Zoom call. I really hope it is, because I've been on some giant Zoom calls and you just want to just walk away as fast as possible, don't you? So kind of paint us a picture of what a great virtual event would look like.
So my perspective is that when you come on, you first log in and you might see a fancy design, you know, on the screen and you see some, you know, hear some music, and you have a countdown clock, so you're getting an anticipation, similar to like how you go to a movie theater, right, where there's this big welcome screen. And then it kind of gears into a live event host where someone's welcoming you and they're excited and they're painting the picture of what this event experience is going to look like and educating and getting people engaged and making sure people are turning on their cameras and not sitting behind it, and incorporating the audience so that there is that engaging element. Now, obviously, that engagement is going to look very different than what it looked like in person, right?
Yeah.
But there is that component. So it really requires a very, very high level, high energy host. And it's interesting because as we started to create in-person, you know, taking in-person events to virtual, we realized really quickly that a lot of our vendor partners were not the right fit for virtual.
True.
Because you need someone who's over the top. You need someone who understands timing in a different kind of way and who's going to be watching these big monitors, right? And saying, oh, you know, John isn't paying attention. How do I get him re-engaged? So it requires a different kind of engagement. It also has to be thought out. It has to be thought out in a different way, right? Now you can't go over to a customer or a client or a prospect and, you know, interact with them. You have to have a fully produced experience. And so what we did was, and what we do is we say, okay, who's the audience? What do they want to achieve? Are they dealing with sales teams? Are they dealing with internal staff? Are they trying to connect people? Do these people have families? And we need to do something that's family friendly, and then really create a package and experience that encapsulates that. So at the end of the day, right, when people are walking away, they're like, wow. And that is really the piece that's important and has to be very thought out. Because if you put something together and you're targeting the wrong audience and you don't really understand what the goal of it is, you're going to miss the boat and people are going to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that. It's almost like having a proper presenter for your host. Because like back in the day when you went into like a real event, most people kind of just got on with it, didn't they? There wasn't really Correct. Much of a host there actually hosting the event. You know, a speaker would just wander up on stage or something and say, hi, I'm John, I'm here to talk to you about something, and get on with it. What is this? You're talking about almost like a some sort of television program, sort mm-hmm. of, you know, you're producing a show.
Exactly. It's really reimagining what it is that needs to be done, because it's a whole different presentation. If you take the in-person event experience, right, you have a door person, they greet you, hey, thanks for coming, blah, blah, blah. You walk in, there's music, there's dancers, there's entertainment, there's live performance, there's food passing, there's drinks, you know, there's socializing, there's sitting, there's so many different pieces. You have all these different niches. But when you talk about a virtual event, it is truly a production. It's like going to a theater, right? It's like the curtain yeah. call, and you have act one, then you have act two. And what do those pieces look like? And like to your point, you know, an event host is really like an MC, right?
Yeah.
And that MC has to keep the flow going, because you don't have those in-person experiences in the same capacity now. So that therefore the needs have shifted. And so understanding the needs and then saying, how do I accomplish this? That is really, really critical for a successful virtual event experience and an engaging one.
So do you think it's a good idea to maybe hire a proper host instead of like getting Dave from accounts to do it or something? You actually hire somebody who actually specializes in hosting events.
Yeah, I mean, it is critical to have and what we want to call an event host or an MC or a moderator, if you will.
Hmm.
Be really on point,
yeah.
because that is the difference between something lagging in an event and staying exciting and staying on track. It is a very important piece. It's not a piece that is important in actual in-person events. It's completely different.
So are virtual events cheaper to stage?
It really depends. So I know you said, you know, you hope it's better than just a Zoom call and so forth. So the reason I'm going to digress back to that and, you know, to answer the question is that when we first started, right, in March, pandemic hit, New York was fully closed. Literally in a few days, we lost our entire business overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
And literally call after call after call, event cancel, space sure. closes, all these kinds of things. And we were an event in-person experience, right? We were not virtual experts. And that's when we realized, wow, like we need to adapt and shift or our business isn't going to recover.
Sure.
So as we were doing that, we researched all these different tech platforms, right? These like immersive 3D avatar, you know, crazy yes. different experiences, right? And they were all super expensive.
Yeah.
And besides being expensive, no one understood them. So then you're like, you're getting clients to spend a lot right? So huge amounts of money. And then there's a huge learning curve where people aren't understanding, and they're also getting bad feedback because people are like, you know, if someone's older and they're not tech savvy, they're not going to learn it quick. Even if you're younger and you're tech savvy, some of these require, you know, a huge learning curve. So it was interesting because it cost a lot. And then we said, maybe we're approaching this wrong. Maybe what we need to do is we need to understand what platforms the companies are using, mm-hmm. what do they understand, and then create around it. And so what we did was, and I'm going to go back to Zoom, we created custom dashboards and we built it onto a Zoom platform. So the simplicity of how to navigate was there. And then we spruced it up. We kind of did all this production and, you know, development and decor, and we navigated it differently. So that allowed us to create a better experience for the user. And it actually allowed us to save money on the tech side and then be able to take some of that money that we would have just been paying for a tech platform and invest into a better experience, and also invest in entertainment and components that we could offer within the event. So that's something that actually we've been doing. And yes, they're expensive. Yes, it depends on, you know, how many people you're having and, you know, how many people you're streaming in, and do you have breakout rooms, and do you have multiple assets going on at one time? But ultimately, the event experience definitely can be more expensive, and it also can be streamlined to be affordable.
Yeah, I like the idea of it being familiar, the software being familiar to what people use at work. I remember going back, a long, long time ago, it must be sort of early to mid-2000s, there was a company, I can't remember the name of it, but they were a type of events type of company, I think. And they would have booths in the UK. So you could go to Birmingham or London or Manchester or something. You could stand in a booth and it would scan all of you and then turn you into an avatar, which you could then use your mouse and your keyboard to walk yourself around a virtual conference center, room, expo. My day, it was so complicated, Erica.
That's the big piece, right? That what is more important? Is the sophistication and newness important?
Yeah.
Or is the simplicity important and the comfort level? And, you know, companies kind of have veered one way or the other. But ultimately, we get a lot of people saying, like, initially, like how you said, I hope it's more than Zoom, because they think of Zoom as like we're on a meeting and, you know, we're talking about numbers and, you know, business and so forth. They don't think of it as like a fun platform. But when you can get them to kind of shift and recognize like, wow, there's a lot that we can offer here, that becomes the direction of choice because it's understandable. So when you say, you know, in the 2000s and you had this like avatar or, you know, an image and so forth, you know, if you don't really conceptually understand what's going on, you get turned off to it.
Yeah.
So that's how you disengage the audience.
Do you think virtual events give us a chance to kind of attract a more global audience as well? Because, I mean, not every company has got a budget to fly staff around the world to expos and conferences and things. There's a much, much easier entry point if it's virtual, isn't there?
I think it's opened up a huge, huge opportunity for companies, for trade shows, for launch products, for companies that want to have like global engagement. It's tremendous. I mean, over the holiday season, it was the first time that we did multiple events for this company. So we have Diligent that we always did their New York event for like 8 years. And I really didn't understand that they had offices in London and Dubai and China and Mexico. I mean, all over, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And for that one time in December, they said, you know, we need to do something for everyone and we can't do something in each of the countries. We can't do something in each of the states. We're all in lockdown. Yeah. And it was at that moment when we went live on the event and I saw people drinking their coffee and having breakfast and the sun was up and I saw other people eating dinner and it was dark. And I said, wow, how amazing is it that we can unify people globally in a global pandemic and get them to be connected where people could see each other's faces and do something as a unified group.
Yeah.
And that is really, really impactful. And to me, that is something that's going to remain. We produce what's called the Event Planner Expo. It's a leading events and hospitality marketing trade show. We've been doing it for 9 years. And last year, we had to take it virtual. It was 3 days. It was 4,000 people. It was 100 speakers. It was 75 vendor booths. And we had people tuning in from California, Arizona, London, you know, Dubai, all over. We never would have been able to do that because a lot of those people, in my belief, wouldn't have shown up in New York because they would have had to fly in, get a couple days of a hotel, feed themselves, schlep all their things, you know, uproot themselves, really allocate multiple days to kind of coming in and doing this experience. So virtual to me opens up a gateway. It doesn't mean that it replaces, you know, in person. They're always going to be different. But it does open up a gateway and allows the producer or the client or the planner another element. So if let's say you, John, you know, you're located and I want to send you kind of a custom box. We call them kitting, right? Like a wow box.
Yeah.
Because you're going to come in virtually to the event. I could technically create a different experience and call it the hybrid experience, the hybrid box, right? And you come in virtually, you still are able to participate. It's a little bit different, but now you're not left out. And so it's an interesting thing as we emerge into whatever that new norm is to see how, as event planners and producers, we can create what we'll consider to be the new norm.
Do you think, I was just thinking, do you think this will help a little bit in the world of social mobility and learning as well? Because I'm thinking if there's a big, I don't know, a big marketing event with lots of keynote speakers all teaching their things to people. There's a lot of folks around the world who just don't have the money to fly to New York and put themselves up in a hotel, which will hike the price because of the event, and then feed themselves for two or three nights. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the money to do that. So this idea of folks have not got as much, they'll be able to still attend these events. I think that's a good thing.
I mean, it's an amazing opportunity. I call it the global pandemic created access.
Yeah.
And it's ironic, because it really did. You know, when we've been doing a ton of virtual events, and the level of speakers that we've been able to get to our virtual stage is something that, you know, in all reality, probably wouldn't have done if it was in person. I wouldn't have had access to them. They wouldn't have been home. They would have been traveling. They would have been too busy. It would have just never occurred. So in some odd ways, the pandemic has created an access point and an entry point and a community that never really existed before, and hopefully in some capacity will remain as we, you know, reemerge. But now you can book speakers virtually. Before, people were like, oh, I don't want to take a virtual gig, right?
Yeah.
Now they're like, wow, I could do 3 events in one day because I'm doing it virtually. I never would have been able to if I had to travel.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of opportunities that are going to come out of this.
Yeah, that's made a huge difference to me as well with the training work I do. I mean, I can spend 3/4 of the day just training, just traveling to a training session. So that's really helped a lot. So what I was thinking, do you think we could mix up live and virtual? Do you see many people doing this where you know, if you've got to bring some dancers on stage to do a bit of a dance, or you've got a bit of a band, or you've got something like that happening, would you still produce that in, say, on, say, a stage in a hall, but broadcasted virtually?
So it's interesting that you say that. That's something that we are talking with a bunch of different clients, actually even in the hospitality industry venues, as they're going back to market and they have huge performers booked. They can't right now bring in the total attendance that they're used to. So doing a hybrid really allows for access. Now that might look different, right? So if you're going to an in-person event, you might pay, I'm just making this up, $200, right?
Yeah.
But now maybe you do entry for virtual, it's $50. Now that access point is different. The experience will be different. And then maybe there's something that if you want to do virtual and a box, like a wow box, where you get some elements that are more like in person that you could feel like it's more engaging, maybe that's $100. So it's going to create tiers and market space that didn't exist before. And I believe that it's going to be a new norm.
The poor marketing executive is usually the person who's given the job of arranging events, especially in smaller organizations and companies and that. So should we hire an event planner? Because some of this sounds a little bit complicated.
You definitely need someone who has the knowledge of the space. Even before the pandemic, you know, companies had what they called in-house, you know, planners or marketers, and they always went and they found someone who knew it better, right? To get the better deals, to get the everything to be produced in a higher level. I do strongly believe that that is a critical piece, because if you don't understand the market space, you can't imagine the options that could exist. And then you're not offering your audience as good of an experience as you could.
Yeah. I think there's, do you think there's a little bit of a snobbery in event planning and things like that, where people think, oh, we don't, an event planner. All they do is book flowers and book bands and things. But when you actually get into the nitty gritty of it, actually putting on an event is a really complicated project, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's soup to nuts. I always say to my team, when we show up, we're babysitting. And they're always like, what do you mean? You know, like when I bring on new staff, what does that mean? I said, if your work isn't done before you walk in the door, then you're not doing your job. So I think what happens is people, from an observation point, they see a planner just standing there. Well, the reason they're standing there is because they did all the logistics behind the scenes before the event. And there's a lot of different levels, right? It's producing it, it's setting it up, it's thinking about all the different movements, the food, the beverage, the entertainment. You know, if there's going to be kind of some kind of speech, is there going to be any gifting? When does that go out? You know, are there desserts? What does that look like? What does the invitation look like? What does a recap look like? Do you have a photographer? Do you have a videographer? Like, there's so many pieces of it. Like, who's on the guest list? Who do you need to serve? What's the objective? So there's an immense amount of levels of what it is. And a lot of people think of event planners, like you said, as like the fluff. But the reality is it's almost, it's really like a very intricate admin component, because all these different pieces are necessary. It's all logistics. And then the fluff is really like 5%.
Yeah, I suppose if people see event planners standing there just smiling, then everything is going to plan. Everything's working if you're doing that.
Yes, exactly. It's when we're moving quickly and rushing is when there's a problem.
It's when you see the wedding planner dashing to the opposite side of the marquee that you know something's happened, don't you?
Exactly.
So how much has your job changed over the last year? I mean, have you had to be in a bit of a crisis mode?
So our company literally went, like I mentioned, overnight from in-person experiences to virtual. We had to immerse ourselves and learn and kind of figure out who we should partner with. So it's been a lot more of strategic partnering, understanding a different market space, and then having to go back to the clients that we served for all these years, right? And say, trust us, take the leap, and we're going to create engaging experiences. Because think about it, you know, when you're planning an in-person event, it's very easy. You walk into a space, you understand it, you see a vision. When you're doing something virtual, it's like, okay, I'm logging in through a password on a computer. Is that going to be fun?
Yeah.
It's completely, completely different. So what I think, as, you know, as these changes has happened, it's allowed us to, you know, grow our skills and expand our toolkit and be able to serve our community in a time where people were stuck apart. And thankfully, you know, most of them were willing to take the leap and understand that we needed to give back and really create experiences for people during a very hard time. A lot of the event curating are more family friendly, which has never been the case really when you think about events. It's more serve the clients, you know, do a cocktail party, let's go dance. It wasn't really focused about like, how do the children feel, right? Yeah. What are the parents dealing with? So I see a shift in what's important from a service perspective. And hopefully that will remain in some capacity as, you know, like I say, we evolve into whatever that new evolution of the events look like.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Do you have any advice on software and tools and things to use?
Well, from a software perspective, it really depends on what your team is most comfortable with. I do feel that, you know, you definitely need like higher level, like a Logitech, cameras and so forth, add-ons to your computer. You definitely need ring lights to help with lighting. You definitely need, you know, if you can somehow strategically partner, or you can rent out, you know, a studio so that you can do some green screening. It really elevates the production level. Those are things that I would say are important, although, you know, when you try to explain that to someone who never did that, they don't think it's important. I think back about the first event that we did from the virtual side, and I remember the client said, "We don't need an event host. I could do it." I said, no, we need an event host, but don't worry, I won't charge you for them this time.
Yeah.
But I want to show you why you need them. And then the next time, she's like, "I get it." So sometimes from a production perspective, and what you need is you need to be able to paint your picture, show people what it is that, you know, you're envisioning, kind of walk them through that process, and ultimately like sketch it out, like doing dress rehearsals, showing them, you know, to put their, you know, their stress level at ease and so forth. Those are the things that I think you really need to invest in, and having someone who's like really, really able to communicate to the prospect and the client is really important. Forgetting about the tech side per se, those pieces are going to come, right? You need all of that. But really being able to like guide someone from a trust perspective and building the level of confidence is like the most important.
Yeah, I think it's, I think one thing you mentioned earlier about a host or a presenter or somebody, even if you have to hire a professional to do it, I think that's a really good plan, because it can get a little bit turgid and droll after a while, can't it?
Totally. And people don't really, you know, keeping in mind, as we took people and, you know, as we continue to do this, as we're creating event experiences, just because something was relevant for in-person events does not mean that they all transfer for virtual and vice versa. So just kind of being able to explain to someone like what the purpose is and why that need is there. And then, you know, if you're comfortable, like for people who are listening, if they're comfortable with just saying, you know what, don't worry about the cost for this one, right? I'll eat the cost, because sometimes people just don't really understand it.
Yeah.
So if you invest into the future, because if you're looking to build the relationships, it's going to come back tenfold.
Yeah.
So don't look short-sighted, look for the long-term play.
Brilliant. Fantastic. I could talk for hours about this with you, Erica. Where can we find you? Where is your website? Where can we find you on social media and see some of the stuff you've been doing?
So our company is EMRG Media. The website is emrgmedia.com. We do have a free download. If someone wants to know about strategies for virtual event planning, you go to bookevents.com.
Cool.
And you will get some strategy and tips. It's absolutely free. And then on social, you know, it's EMRG Media. And my personal one is Erica Maurer, ERICAMAURER7. And that is Instagram. So any of those platforms will lead you. And if someone wants to get in touch about any of the questions or details that we talked about, they can always shoot an email to events@emrgmedia.com.
Fantastic, Erica. I'll put links to all of that in the show notes so that we can just tap and click on those to our heart's content. Erica, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to Erica for her time. Don't forget to check out the links in the show notes and download your event strategies guide. Now, if you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more, because there's a lot more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast player. It's absolutely everywhere. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.